News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Northeast Diary. As we explore the northeastern part of India, it gets intriguing to know about it in each episode. Let me tell you about the excitement in today's episode. Today, we bring an interview with Arman Ali, a disability activist, where he talks about rehabilitation, education, employment, advocacy, awareness, as well as legal aid for people with disabilities. And in our new segment, Enchanting Folktales of Northeast India, we delve into the captivating world of Northeastern folklore, unearthing tales that have been passed through generations and generations, revealing the magic and wonder of Northeast India's storytelling tradition. We also bring a captivating report on an extraordinary horticultural feat from the lush landscapes of Nagaland. But for now, let's go to Assam, where preparation of Bohuk Bihu is in full swing.
Today we are diving into the vibrant and joyous celebration of Bohag Bihu, also known as Rongali Bihu, a major festival in Assam. It's not just a harvest festival, it's a celebration of new beginnings, cultural heritage and boundless joy. Join us as we explore the vibrant traditions and spirited atmosphere that characterize this auspicious start to the Assamese New Year. In the serene landscapes of Assam, where the air is filled with the fragrance of freshly bloomed flowers and the fields are adorned with lush greenery, Bohag Bihu brings a wave of joy and optimism. It's a time when families come together, communities unite, and the spirit of festivity fills the air. Rongali means joy in Assamese, and indeed, joy abounds during this festival. From April 14th to April 20th, people across Assam engage in various rituals and celebrations to welcome the new year and the bountiful harvest season ahead. Bohag Bihu is just one part of the annual Bihu festival celebrated thrice a year. Each Bihu festival holds its significance, with Bohag Bihu being the most significant as it heralds the Assamese New Year and the onset of spring. On the first day of Bohag Bihu, known as Guru Bihu, people bathe their cattle with turmeric, feed them special treats, and adorn them with new robes. It's a gesture of gratitude towards the animals that play a crucial role in the agricultural life of Assam. The second day, Manu Bihu, is when families gather, don new clothes and indulge in sumptuous feasts. Traditional delicacies like til laru, pitha, murid laru, gila pitha and poka mithoi grace every household, adding flavors to the celebrations.
Bihu
throughout the 7 days of Bohag Bihu, each day is dedicated to various aspects of life, from prayers for household deities to honoring farm equipment and domestic animals. And of course, no Bihu celebration is complete without the rhythmic beats of Bihu Geet, the traditional folk songs that fill the hearts of Assamese people with joy and nostalgia. As the sun sets on another year and rises on a new beginning, Bohag Bihu encapsulates the spirit of hope, renewal and togetherness. It's a time when the bonds of community grow stronger and the traditions of Assam shine brightly. This is Abhishek Mukhopadhyay signing off for Northeast Diary, wishing you all a joyous and prosperous Bohag Bihu.
Friends, now we bring you an extraordinary tale from the heart of Nagaland. Mr. Yenobemu Roy, a farmer from Nagaland, has caught the attention of many. From the quaint village of Boka, Mr. Roy has achieved something truly exceptional, harvesting a coriander plant towering at an astounding 8.75 feet. This feat not only captivates the imagination but also raises questions about the innovative method Mr. Iroi employs in his cultivation. Join us as we delve into this fascinating story brought to you by our correspondent in Kohima.
Mr. Yenobemu Iroi humbly attributes his success to traditional farming practices, emphasizing that he utilized the same seed he faithfully sown years after years. He revealed that his cultivation process involved no specialized fertilizers or chemicals, proudly declaring his coriander plants to be purely organic and attributed to his dedication to sustainable agriculture. Sharing his farming technique, Mr. Yenobemu Iroi said,
আর মই একো ফার্টিলাইজাৰ স্পেশাল টেকনিক কি কি চলা নাই আমি নৰ্মেল চিপছ আমি কেনেকুৱা চলাই থাকি লগাইছে তো এইটো চালটো এনে তাই অচানক 8.75 feet পম্পা হৈ যায় কিনা আছে আৰু এতিয়াতো ফুল ওলা কি কি লাষ্ট চিজন ওলা আছে তো মই পিছত নিমিতে এনে ৰাখি দিয়ে কিনা আছে এইটো আমি তোলা চিপছটো অলপ চাল দি কি লগাই এইটো নৰ্মেল চিপছ এইটো লগাইছে এইটো চাল তাই একলা এনেকুৱা হৈ যায় যে আমি কলনিতে ওচৰ জেগাতে তো চব মানুহ লগাই কিনা আছে এইবি এইটো একলা এনে এনেকুৱা লম্পা হৈ যায় যে লাষ্টলি আমি ক'বলৈ মন থাকে তো এইটো আমি কাম বস্তি দিব কাষ্ট পানে তো অৰ্গেনিক পিচি দিব কাম কি কি কাম পিচি ভাল ওলাই থাকে এইটো পৰা গভৰ্ণমেণ্ট লাষ্ট চাইটো পৰা বি আমি কাণকে আৰু এক্সট্ৰা মদত কৰিলে পিচি খুচি পাব.
According to Mr. Iroi, this exceptional coriander plant was sown last October alongside several other batches. However, this particular one outgrew all the other coriander plants in his garden. Mr. Iroi proudly said that no pruning or trimming activities were necessary throughout the plant growth cycle, seeing that it has given the same treatment as it did to the other coriander plants. Mr. Iroi also thanked the government for assisting all to farmers. However, he maintained that Woka, being a fertile land suitable for farming, urged the government to give more support to uplift the farmers. With Johanna Muri, Asunyo from Kohima for Northeast Diary.
Enchanting folk tales of Northeast India. In Northeast Diary, we embark on a journey into the heart of the vibrant cultures nestled in the enchanting landscapes of Northeast India. Listeners, today we invite you to delve into the captivating world of Karbi folk tales, an integral part of the cultural heritage of the Karbi tribe. Nestled in the verdant hills of Assam's Karbi Anglong district, the Karbi people have long thrived amidst the lush forests and rolling plains of the region. As one of the major ethnic communities in the Northeast, the Karbis have preserved their traditions, beliefs and way of life through generations, often encapsulated in their rich tapestry of folk tales. In the absence of written records, these folktales serve as the primary vessel through which we can glean insights into the early history and cultural evolution of the Karbi tribe. They offer a window into a world where humanity's existence intertwines seamlessly with the rhythms of nature and the land. Through the medium of radio, we aim to bring to life the essence of Karbi folklore, exploring its myriad facets and unraveling the layers of tradition, belief and societal norms that shape the Karbi way of life. These tales not only provide glimpses into ancient customs and rituals, but also delve into universal themes of love, envy, morality and spirituality, reflecting the timeless essence of human experience. Join us as we embark on this immersive journey where each episode of Northeast Diary promises to transport you to the mystical realm of Karbi folklore, offering a deeper understanding of this unique culture and its enduring legacy in the tapestry of Northeast India. We have Manoj Mayankar with a story entitled Inglong Mekha.
A hill stands high even today at Dimarua. Its name is Inglong Mekha. In Karbi language, Inglong means hill or mountain and Mekha means a burning flame. Thus the full meaning of Inglong Mekha is burning flame hill. A Karbi folk song tells of an interesting story as to why this hill is called Burning Flame Hill. Once upon a time, the Karbis lived in the Lumsang or Langpi hills of Dimapur. They had to remain as subordinates under the Kachari king, who unleashed a reign of terror on the former. They were sacrificed before gods and goddesses. The Kachari king had tamed a tiger cub. The king even ordered to feed it by milking the breasts of Karbi women. One day, while royal employee Kleng Dung went to milk from the breasts of one Karbi lady, Rang Parpi, she felt overwhelmingly ashamed and, flying into a rage, hit his head with an axe, cutting it into two. The news of Kleng Dung's death spread across the Kachari kingdom like wildfire. The king, getting heavily angry, ordered his soldiers to drive away the Karbis from Dimapur. Armed with the royal orders, the soldiers too began to drive the Karbis away from one side. A group of Karbis under the leadership of Karbi heroine Tumung Phusun began to flee towards Dimarua. While fleeing, they kept chopping off the gobar sothas, plantain trees and the four parts of bamboo trees. These trees turn dry and black after they are chopped. In case of plantain trees, their shoots gradually get longer and longer. The motive behind such chopping off was to make the Kachari soldiers think that several days ago the Karbis had passed through this route. Fleeing that way, the Karbis reached Langpi or Barpani. They had to stop after seeing the river in front. At that moment, a deep sigh of melancholy emerged from their mouths. Kapi Ili, meaning where to go. The Karbis believe even today that the name Kapili, a river, has its origin in Kapi Ili. Having no means at hand, Tumung Phusun, in no time, bisected the water of the Kapili with Chiari of her handloom and arranged for her people to cross the river. In the group, there were two more notable personalities apart from Tumung Phusun. They were Bihal Bepo and Kleng Mekha. Bihal Bepo, playing the role of a bridge, helped his companions to cross the Kapili River. At last, Kleng Mekha, emitting a fire from a forest, led the Karbis in the thick forest. But her benevolence was rewarded by the people by labeling her to be a witch, and who thereafter killed her first and then covered the dead body underneath the hills. The local people believe that even today, fire sometimes breaks out all of a sudden at that place. And so, they named the place Inlong Maker. It seems Inlong Maker is still carrying its deep melancholy by standing erect in the hills of Tomra or Dumra.
So that was Manoj Mayankar, senior broadcaster, with the Garbhya story.
Welcome to our segment Personality of the Week, where we bring you an exclusive interviews with intriguing individuals making waves in various fields. Today, we have Arman Ali, a stalwart in the field of disability rights, boasting a career spanning over 2 decades as the Executive Director of the National Center for Promotion of Employment for Disabled People. He leads with a wealth of experience. Arman's impactful advocacy work has garnered global recognition, earning him prestigious awards and honorary position in key governmental committees at both state and national level. Today, we have the privilege of tapping into his expertise as he shares insights on fostering inclusivity and empowerment.
My name is Arman Ali. I am Executive Director of NCPEDP, that is National Center for Promotion of Employment for Disabled People. I am based out of Delhi, but I am basically from Guwahati, Assam.
Can you share a bit about your journey into becoming a disability rights activist and your personal experiences that have shaped your advocacy work?
Hi, Meeta ji. Thank you. I got into the disability rights movement just by chance. I was volunteering with Shishu Sarathi back in 2001 and 2002, and that was my first engagement directly with any organizations which is working for people with disability and with people with disability. And I had received the national award in 1998 by then Honorable Prime Minister Sri Atal Bihari Vajpayee ji as the best disabled employed youth from Assam. And that award function was my first exposure to disability as a sector. Prior to that, my thinking was around a very medical model of disability. I thought I have a condition or a disease or a problem which is my fault, and I am not able to participate in the mainstream society because of that. After that, in the award function, I met many other disabled people from all over the country who were doing exemplary work in and around disability and other space around employment, art, and so on. And when I came back to Guwahati, I was invited to visit Shishu Sarathi, which is a renowned and very old institution working in the area of disability in the Northeast. So my visit gave me an exposure to children with intellectual and developmental disabilities and the kind of activity it was doing. And I would not be able to point out how and what happened that I got into, you know, the advocacy work. I recall that there was this Nehru Park in Guwahati which was coming up, and this was in the newspapers saying that there was a huge amount of money being spent to renovate the park to make it, more advanced in terms of amenities and so on. And I thought, if it is being done, why not make it disabled friendly as well? And that's when I start writing to the authorities and meeting them and talking about it. And I did not receive a very favorable response in my interactions and writing to the concerned departments. And, I then decided to write to the press, and it was covered in the leading newspaper in Assam and Guwahati. And that's where I started looking at disability as a rights issue, and I look at barriers of people with disability which is causing disability per se and not the person with the impairment.
As the Executive Director of the National Center for Promotion of Employment for Disabled People, NCPEDP, could you elaborate on some of the key initiatives and projects that NCPEDP has undertaken to promote inclusivity and accessibility for the persons with disabilities?
As the Executive Director of NCPEDP, I think we have led the movement in terms of accessibility discourse whether you talk about accessibility with aviation, transport, railways, urban development, the national building bylaws, the national building code. We have advocated the accessibility need of people who are blind in digital space, websites, and we have brought together a lot of knowledge around this accessibility and disability per se in terms of, you know, railway. We have done a white paper, we have done a white paper on Ministry of Urban Development. We constantly engaged with the Smart City project. We did a lot of work around digital accessibility for people who are blind and so on. And right now as I speak, we are trying to set up an assistive technology hub for India. It will be one of the first kind of hub where we'll have an ecosystem like the startup to promote assistive technology for people with disability. We have been running an award around promoting a universal design for people with disability. It's been last 15 years that we are doing it on year to promote the culture of universal design, the advocacy around universal design to do.
In your opinion, what are some of the biggest challenges that persons with disabilities face in India today, and how can society work towards overcoming these challenges?
I think the biggest challenge that people with disability face in India is an acute lack of understanding of disability as a rights and development issue. There is no awareness when it comes to understanding a lifespan approach of a person with disability. And this lack of awareness, the lack of knowledge about disability and the solutions that it requires, it I think isolates people with disability, and that is the biggest challenge. We are stuck on terminologies that we use for people with disability and not looking at disabled people as people first and as a citizen of this country. So I think there's a need to create awareness, a mass, you know, like a mission mode awareness, which kind of encompasses the a lifespan approach towards disability, to create more systemic changes, to create solutions, and you know, I think that would kind of remove a lot of barriers, and people with disability will be able to participate in the mainstream society.
As someone hailing from Northeast India yourself, could you shed light on any unique challenges or perspectives regarding disability rights advocacy in the region? And also, what advice would you give to the young individuals with disabilities who aspire to become advocates for change in their communities?
I come from Northeast India, and you know how it was. I think we were about 20 to 30 years behind from the mainland India, and the Northeast had its own issues. You know, we growing up, we were infested with militancy and other agitations and various issues, flood, disaster, and conflicts, and so on. And in all that, trying to find disability into the right place, to find disability in the agenda, had always been a task. But I think we have been able to find that space, and for me, my 9 years of being the executive director of Shishu Sarathi there gave me a lot of opportunity to engage with people with disability, families, and the government, and other civil society organizations. And I think it was a great learning experience for me as a young individual myself. I came back from Bangalore. I left my job with Infosys and started to work with Shishu Sarathi as very young, and then taking this responsibility on, and you know, it gave me that opportunity, a playground where I could you know, be the ambassador myself as a person with disability and talk about rights of disabled people myself. I think it made a lot of impact in my life and gave me the confidence that one can be from the remotest place in the world but still raise their voice and, you know, make the right noises and get notice and get the kind of attention and subject at me that it requires. And the successes that I've had in Northeast, across the region, traveling across, meeting disabled people and the government people, I gained a lot of knowledge, and that gave me that kind of on-the-ground understanding of a disability, which I have been able to continue to take it forward and voice out the concerns of people from the last village or in a remote part of the country.
Finally, how do you personally measure the impact of your advocacy work, and what motivates you to continue striving for positive changes in the lives of persons with disabilities?
I think, you know, disability is a political problem, and there is nothing wrong with me. But personally, I don't think that there is anything wrong with me. I come from a very blessed family. I have, you know, brothers and a lot of friends like brothers and friend all over the world, and I think they instill a lot of confidence and love in me, and that keeps moving me every day. And I think it's very important that you organize yourself. I organize myself. I look at my challenges, things that I need to plan to so that I can do. I need to do on an everyday basis, and then just give my best every day. I think I'm very happy doing what I do, and this is the only thing I know how to do. So I just make it impossible for people to ignore disability.
You just heard an interview with Arman Ali, a disability rights activist. The interviewer was Neeta Kejriwal. Coming up next is the vibrant Assamese Bihu song Bohagi, performed by the talented Wonder Sisters Rupankrita and Alankrita. Relish this delightful rendition with its raw, authentic Bihu essence. With that, we come to the end of this edition of Northeast Diary. Do join us next week to hear more stories from this enchanting part of India. Until then, goodbye.
This program was presented and produced by Vinita Thakur with assistance from Kumar Gaurav. It was brought to you by the News Services Division of Akashwani.